Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll receive 15% off your next order. All right, we have a great show on a Monday. First things first, of course, the Brooklyn Nets have another buyout acquisition. This time in LaMarcus Aldridge makes his way out of San Antonio to come and join the Brooklyn Nets. How does his presence affect the rotations in Brooklyn? What are the expectations for him at this stage of his career? And really, how do we think he's going to maybe influence the style of play that we see from the Nets down the stretch? Then we, of course, touch back on the Detroit Pistons game and the other buyout acquisition for Brooklyn, Blake Griffin. A revenge game, as Doug Norty would like you to remember. He goes out and really just plays with an edge. He gets some, there's technicals all over that one, but he puts together a really nice game, knocks down a triple, takes a big lob. I think gives you the sample size that shows you, even at this stage of his career, he can still show up in a big way for a small stretch. Really nice game for him. We dive in on that as well. And then in the closeout segment, it is, of course, the buyout market in general. Let's just say Doug Norty has some thoughts. We're going to get into all of that, of course. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast. On the Locked On Podcast Network, it's your team, and you know it's every day. I'm Doug. I almost said I'm Adam Arbrecht. Well, buddy, this must be, I guess I was just like, I was in my dream journaling where I was just like wishing that I was where I was wishing I was you. I'm Doug Norty, owner and operator of DFSR.com. Got you covered. All of your DFS needs, NBA, MLB right around the corner. Can't believe that season's upon us. NHL as well. So go over to DFSR.com to check that out. And over there is the guy I want to be, Adam Arbrecht. He's the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster. He's also the host of the One Giant podcast, where he's covering the New York football Giants as well. Buddy, how we doing?
Well, that chuckle was good, man. For the most part, I'm fantastic. A little disgusted, though. We got a lot of things to get into here. The fact that Brooklyn Nets fans did not put more respect on Nicholas Claxton hitting a three-pointer in that blowout loss. I don't know. I got over it because it's been a couple days and there's obviously bigger fish to fry here for us, but you tried. You tried your best on Twitter to alert the people. It fell on deaf ears. Nick Claxton, perimeter threat.
It's in his bag. It's in his bag. That wasn't going to be the topic of the show, but Adam, he was texting me about it the other night, even though it was like many days and hours after it had happened. So it's still, and now here we are many more days and hours afterwards, and it's still on my guy's mind, but that's okay. Nick Claxton hitting the three is big news. Other big news coming here for the Nets world. We're going to talk a lot about this today. That's going to be the theme of the podcast, the buyout market. And that is one Mr. LaMarcus Aldridge is expected, and maybe he just has officially signed with the Brooklyn Nets going forward. He was bought out by the San Antonio Spurs, hadn't really played there for weeks and weeks. It was expected that he was probably going to reach some kind of mutually beneficial situation with the Spurs. They end up doing that. They buy him out. The original thought was, very quickly it was reported, and very rarely are guys like this wrong, like the Shams and Wojes, usually have a pretty good beat on this. So I'm actually wondering sort of what changed it. But the original thought, which was kind of an industry belief, was that he was going to sign with the Miami Heat. And that didn't happen. And we were sort of surprised to find out that he is going to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. So before we get into I guess we can just start breaking it down here. But like LaMarcus, you hear LaMarcus Aldridge. This, you know, follows obviously the Blake Griffin buyout and sign deal by the Nets. But what do you hear? What do you think when you hear the name LaMarcus Aldridge? And then we can talk about sort of like what happens in theory with the Nets rotations going forward.
Yeah, maybe not dissimilar to Blake Griffin. The first thing that pops my mind is name brand, right? Everybody knows LaMarcus Aldridge's name. But again, like Blake Griffin, this is a guy that is in a very different place in his career than he was back in his Trailblazers days, obviously. But I just hear veteran player, I hear reliable player, and I hear a guy that, from a Brooklyn Nets standpoint, has a lot, I think, of functionality in what this roster needs right now and what they could use to supplement some of the bigs that they've already compiled there through the draft, through the buyout market with Blake. And now, ultimately, Aldrich will get into that mix. And I think that he can, again, carve out a role for himself.
Right, so he's going to bring probably a little bit of like stretch five stuff. He's really not suited to play the four at this point, at least defensively, definitely, almost definitely not. It's going to be really hard for him to defend sort of like more wingy fours that you're going to see across the league. So he's definitely probably at some point, or mostly here, like a functional center for the Nets. You mentioned before about how don't think that the LaMarcus Aldridge of the Trailblazers days, got my P's messed up with Portland, the Portland days is walking through the door. That guy has long since left the hardwood and has moved on. He's the totally different version of the guy that we saw there. And it does kind of, you know, like you said, beg the question about what's going to happen with some of these big man minutes. Now, I'm of two minds with stuff like this. And I guess I can start on the, I'm going to start on the more positive mind to start here with guys like Aldridge and Blake. Because I've been thinking a lot about this relative to the buyout market. We'll get into our thoughts about the buyout market later on in the show. So I want to get stuck in the buyout market mire here too early. My original thought on both these guys is, you know, we've been very clear about saying like our expectations, I think, for you and me, whichever one you want to put in there, that's supposed to be correct. has been, you know, realistic expectations around what these guys are going to provide when they actually play for the Nets. I think we've been pretty good. I think that's been mostly borne out with a guy like Blake. I think that our expectation levels around Aldridge are, you know, similarly, you know, grounded. So I think that's fine. I do think the good side, and I think like where these buyout guys, even if they're a little bit long in the tooth and they are, you know, clearly on the wrong side of the trajectory when it comes to their overall skill set, the good thing you get with these guys is you get smarts. Like you get you get years worth of experience, and I think that probably for the Nets right now is worth more than like athletic upside that you can get from the other guys. And maybe I'm just stating the obvious here. And so, you know, forgive me if this is like super obvious or didactic or whatever it is. But the part where it's less likely that a guy like Blake and guy like, look, they make up for the fact that they're not the player they once were by having institutional knowledge around basketball that's going to be hard to figure out for a young guy, right? Like, so it's like less likely that they're going to make some crazy bonehead mistake because they've already done their 10,000 hours in the NBA, right? Like they've reached their Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours. Like we figured it out. And even if our skills are on a decline, it's unlikely that we're going to totally just kill you with some egregious error over and over again because we're young and we don't know what we're doing and the stage is too big, right? So like that's the kind of thing I've been thinking more and more recently with these two guys because I'm not all that excited to get them, but then I'm like, oh, right. The part where the veteran know-how around having just been on the court for so long actually probably is worth the hit you take on the fact that they just aren't the players they once were and are like less athletic than even many other up-and-coming guys in the NBA right now.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it from the standpoint of the Nets have 25 games left to go in this season, right? So you said we'll get to the buyout piece of this and the market in general, but when you join a team this late, when you're making acquisitions like this late in the season, this isn't in the offseason where you're going to have the first handful of games, handful of weeks, handful of months to figure things out. It's only a 72-game season, so you want to kind of be able to throw guys in there, and we've seen this with Blake already. He just functionally understands what he should be doing. Doesn't necessarily need to know the playbook that Steve Nash is calling for his team on a game-to-game, quarter-to-quarter, minute-to-minute basis, but he gets it. He reads it. He knows where to go to get a nice screen set up for Harden to free someone up, knows how to get in and try to fight for rebounds, etc. So I think the same thing, to your point with Aldrich, you could probably throw him on the floor with most teams in the NBA, and he's going to figure out what he needs to do for who, when, and where without needing to have it spelled out for him. The maybe the secondary piece of that now is when you look inside that 4-5 room for the Nets. I do find it interesting that they are loaded with a ton of veteran experience there, really. And it's a
it just, I don't know, an interesting footnote, is a counterbalance to like the Shamits and Bruce Browns of the world, right? Really young guys, ton of energy, firing at will. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have a ton of guys that have just this wealth of knowledge. So they do seem to be filling out that roster in a very thoughtful way now down the stretch. And also because veterans usually, and guys that are, as you said, long in the tooth, those are the guys that become available now. You don't get the 23-year-olds coming off of buyouts, you know, three quarters of the way through a season.
Yeah, and like the 15 minutes, the 15 to 19 minutes that the guys like Aldridge and Blake are going to play for the Nets are incredibly much more valuable than they would be to like at a young Spurs team that's trying to see what they have, or a Pistons team that's just trying to like figure things out. So I get where like the value to the Nets now for these guys is much higher. And, you know, like, you know, we talk about the big men minutes. You know, this is probably, Nets have long clamored for the power forward, right? Like, how long have we heard Aaron Gordon, like anybody, any name that was that could have been remotely associated with the position of power forward was a guy, or even a big at this point, as a guy that the Nets fans have just gotten frothy about. Like, Gorgie Dang hit the buyout market, and fans were like a titter on Twitter about thinking about this guy.
It must happen.
I mean, look, it's like Gorgie Dang. Like, what are we talking about here? I get the wanting to be excited because it's news, but not all news needs to be something we get excited about. Aldridge coming in, though, probably does begin to, you know, we talked about this before, begin to basically spell the end of DeAndre Jordan's minutes, I think. I know he closed the other night. I think that we are going to see just a continued decrease in when we see DeAndre Jordan, and the spots are going to be completely just like chosen at this point. Not, you know, I don't know how soon Aldridge ramps up to play. He hasn't played in more than 3 weeks now for the Spurs. So I think it's going to be a little bit of time before we see him on the court. But ultimately, I do think that DeAndre is probably the one to go. I want to talk about DeAndre. Excuse me. I want to talk about Aldridge. And then I want to talk about the Blake game that we saw on Friday. And then sort of how it all relates to DeAndre Jordan as well. We're going to get to some more buyout thoughts too. But first, going to talk to you about betonline.ag. Man, is this a good time of year. College basketball firing, NBA every single night with some crazy lineups too. Like, I don't know if you saw the Bucks lineup the other night. Oh my goodness. And they hung with the Knicks. It's crazy. Like, this is like, we're in such a weird, wacky time when it comes to sports. NHL in full swing, little Wayne and Garth, little swing as well. Swing. Bet Online even covers the award shows and reality TV that you get in on as well. Real time updated odds and props on anything you can imagine. Plus, they have all the news and scores too. So it's basically just a one-stop sports shop. And it's the best way for you to get your bets in on all this stuff. Totally free to sign up as well. Go over to betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON with your first deposit, and you're going to get 50% as a welcome bonus on that deposit. So 50% welcome bonus on the first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON on BetOnline. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. It'll have you saying, "We're not worthy." Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts fulfilled.
Amazing Wayne and Garth tie-in. Not planned at all, but like me throwing in an extra syllable on the swing for you to "we not worthy." This guy's a professional, man. You want to go sign Adam Armbrecht up for your improv classes too. This guy's a yes and guy, not a no but guy.
I will not hand you the note that says he handed me a note that says he has a gun.
I'm gonna need you to hand me all your guns.
But you mentioned wanting to get into Aldridge a little bit more, the Blake Griffin game as well. The DeAndre Jordan piece, real quick though, I will say we mentioned this at the time around the Blake Griffin conversation starting to come up. We mentioned it as Nicholas Claxton started to emerge a little bit. When you talk about the odd duckling in the group, it does become a little bit of DeAndre Jordan, because his functionality is an outlier for everything that you want to do between Jeff Green, Claxton, even Blake Griffin to a lesser degree, not as athletic, we understand that. And now Aldridge, all these guys can function within the same type of space, being able to stretch out a little bit defensively, even if Aldridge is going to struggle with wings. But in the five role, he can still do that. You know, DeAndre Jordan's role, his identity as a player, is now an outlier to what seems to be the identity of this team.
The good news on that is actually the tie that binds it all together here is that Claxton can play with both sets of guys. So like, it's not like these minutes won't actually come from taking minutes away from Claxton, because we saw him play with both DeAndre and Blake on Friday and, you know, and end up closing the game. So, like, that's the good news, is that it, for sure, no matter what happens, it's going to be Nick Claxton on the floor, and then they're going to figure everything else out. Like I said, I think that, you know, the way the current NBA is going, a guy like Aldridge can live a little bit more around the perimeter in terms of taking up defensive assignments. So, and that's just, like, not something DeAndre could do. They were winning late in the game, so they were able to close with DeAndre on Friday. And they also have Plumlee out there, so it's a little more helpful to have DeAndre there, because Plumlee's just not going to range you out. But these are, like, the very few situations where it's going to work out, right? Like, these are, like, this is just what's going to happen with DeAndre Jordan. We're going to see the marginalization of him, especially when we see a guy like Blake play pretty darn well on Friday. Now, you want to call it a revenge game? Look, the guys that are in my users chat every night talking about this stuff, they always want to hang their hats in revenge games. I don't think they're real. I think there probably was something to the Blake piece, though. Not real revenge, because he's not taking revenge on them. Like, they let him go to a good team, so that's not like a revenge piece. Like, oh, we're getting revenge for him getting the thing he wanted, right? So it doesn't make total sense. But I do think there was a part of him that was a little more hyped. What did you see from Blake on Friday? Did it have you encouraged about his opportunity? Did it, like, was it a little run hot maybe in there? Like, what were your thoughts watching Blake's game? He was clearly excited about it, and, you know, he looks spry, if nothing else.
Well, you know, it's funny, because by the end of it, my takeaway was, you know, it was good. He clearly had an intensity about him. My favorite part about it is when they challenged the call the Pistons did, it got overturned. It went to center circle for any two to tip it off after they called a foul, an offensive foul on a rebound. And when the Nets won that, Blake Griffin was on the sidelines and he turned to the Pistons bench and said, "Great challenge." Like, he was taunting them on everything. And it was great. It was fun. Like, I enjoyed watching it. Overall, what I took away was, though, he hits a triple. That's a big play. I think that he wanted to be able to get that shot. Took a big lob from Harden. Still has the ups. Was maybe just hiding it away for the time there in Detroit a little bit. You know, it's another big piece that he was, like, throwing out there, kind of taunting everybody about that as well. But at the end of the day, he also had some sloppy plays. Yeah. He also fumbled around the basket a bit. He also, you know, pinned a couple elbows against his body and took some fouls. So it's not to diminish it, but I think it was, yeah, this dude can run hot on just pure, you know, energy and you know, get back at you attitude. And then at some point, he come back down to earth with it a little bit. It was fun to watch. And I think what you ultimately did get was a true sample size of where Blake Griffin is. You can't overexpose him. You can't run him for 25 minutes a game, but he can give you these little stretches like this. And I think this is what the Nets look at a lot of these guys. Give us a little burst here for 10 to 12 minutes in a game and 15 minutes. And we're going to be really satisfied with that to feather us across to Nicholas Claxton continuing to grow in what he does. So it was a really fun game. I liked watching it. And no, it didn't really change my opinion, which has been fairly neutral and, you know, mostly positive on Blake Griffin. That's where I was coming into that game. That's where I was when I left it.
Yeah, the 17, I totally agree. I think the box score ends up making it look like he was better than he was. Like, 17 points is a lot of points in 20 minutes, obviously. You know, didn't do much on the boards, really didn't do much outside of the scoring. So I think that the points are something you get really, you know, super excited about. I do think for that amount of time on the court, they probably were an outlier. You know, he shoots 2 for 2 from three, gets the line 6 times, knocks down 5 of them. So overall, a nice offensive game. But that is not something that I would come to expect. So I think the truth for me lies somewhere in the middle. It's like, he was fine. The box score makes it look like he was really good, and I don't think that was the case. But it's still better than him being a total zero, which there was some part of him coming in here where the total zero, while not likely, was at least a little bit on the table, right? Like, yeah. it was something that had the chance to happen. And I think we can pretty confidently say now that part is not going to happen. But it's also not going to be the part where it's like, you know, 2012 Blake Griffin or whatever the year that he was, you know, kind of lighting the world on fire was, 2013, something like that. Like, I don't think that guy's clearly not back. So, yeah, I think overall, nice scoring output. You'd like to see it. I think the fire and the energy from him is there. That probably makes up for the lack of athleticism. And you're mostly just asking for him not to make any boneheaded mistakes. Like, something you don't need to teach. We're not teaching these guys on the fly at this point, right? Like, we're not having to coach them up. Like, Nick Claxton is still very much in the you know, he's still a pretty raw player. Like, he's getting by on sheer athleticism. He still kind of makes mistakes at times, and his game isn't so super polished by any means, but you live with it because the athleticism's so great, and his overall trajectory is headed in a really, really nice place, but he's still pretty young and raw and doesn't really have that many minutes. I think overall, like, Blake's like the opposite piece, right? It's like, we don't need to coach this guy too much. You can pretty much tell him schemes, and he's going to understand that he's rarely going to be in the wrong place. But he's also just not going to be a guy that's going to light the world on fire either. But I think, again, that's what the Nets are going for with these veteran moves.
Do you think, because you just mentioned Claxton here before we get into the buyout market, do you, like, the Aldrich now, Blake Griffin, even where they stood on DeAndre Jordan coming into the season. I mean, obviously the Nets had some sense because they chose to move Jared Allen. Now, that was a necessity to facilitate a trade for Harden, so that's fine. But do you think that these moves... Say Claxton had played more last year. Would they be making these same moves for Griffin and for Aldrich? Would they feel more confident in him? Because again, I think you're right. He just kind of goes on pure instinct and athleticism right now, and it can give you really good runs. And he's been far away from when he's taken a couple of bad stretches of fouls at times, or is a little out of place, etc. If they had a bigger sample size on him, would they have been less inclined to bring in a couple of these veteran players here for this home stretch heading towards, obviously, what they want to be a championship run?
I'll go the opposite way. If they gotten a bigger sample size on him, he would have been included in the Harden trade, and he wouldn't even be on the team. So, like, I think...
Do you think that would have happened?
Yeah, definitely.
You think the teams would have said, oh, I don't care, keep Jared Allen. They would have had to put them both in or something.
Mm. Maybe not. Maybe there was a breaking point at which they didn't want to give up too much more, but like, they gave up the two young pieces that they basically had at that point, right? Allen and LeVert. Right. Like, Claxton wasn't a thing at that point. And then they gave up a ton of picks. I wonder if the Rockets are like, you need to walk back one of these picks. Or you take back one of the picks and we'll take Claxton. Like, yeah. I think that's a real thing. Because in the end, I mean, the Rockets obviously got the deal that they got looks really bad on paper now, but also remember that Claxton really hadn't played at all at that point. Like, this is a relatively new development, so I think that if he had played like this last year, they probably would have been more inclined to not probably care as much. I mean, maybe they knew that this was coming with him, and that's why they were fine letting Jared Allen go. Or maybe it's just like, hey, it's James Harden and we'll just give you whatever. Like, I think there's a lot of things a lot of things happening here. But I think if he had played like this, this guy's a really valuable piece now. I'm incredibly valuable. Just for what he can do on the defensive end alone is worth just so much based on his age right now. Like, the ability to switch. I can't believe this turned into a Claxton thing. I thought we were going to talk all Blake and Aldridge during this time, but I guess if you're talking bigs, that's what you have to do. So no, I think if he had played like this last year, they would have felt better about letting Allen go, but I think that they would have run the risk of just losing him in general.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I'm always curious about those pieces and, you know, the functionality of the decisions you make. And then now you bring in these vets to, just in case, 20 more games, let Claxton continue to develop and have these safeguards of veteran experience that you know you have around him. And he can learn from those guys, too. So, again, just more smart moves from Sean Marks.
All right. We are going to get to some buyout thoughts here in a second. First, going to talk to you about Built Bar. We've been talking to you about Built Bar all the time. That's because Built Bar is really easy to talk to you about. It's absolutely delicious, 100% covered in chocolate, low calorie, low sugar, high protein bar, and excuse me, the best high protein bar on the market right now. And it's really not even close. This stuff, you're going to think these are ice cream flavors, but they're not. They're actually just nutritious, good, healthy, energy raising protein bars, all coming to you from Built Bar. They're so good, in fact, that Built Bar has thrown up all of the different flavors into a matchup to decide 64 team bracket, and just in time for the old March Madness here, to try to decide what the best flavor of Built Bar is. Buddy, you ready? Here we go. Caramel brownie or coconut brownie chunk?
No, caramel brownie. That's the combination of two of my favorite things. I don't see how you could go any other way.
I have a feeling coconut brownie chunk takes this one. Again, you're never losing with any of these flavors because you can just have both. That's the way Built Bar works. You're allowed to buy all of them, folks. And right now, you can get them all at BuiltBar.com or go over to Twitter and follow them at Bar_Built. When you make your purchase on BuiltBar.com, remember to use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15. You can get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. And before we get to the rest of this buyout market, going to talk to you about our friends over at Rock auto, buying car parts right now can be a borderline disaster if you're trying to do it live and in person, face to face. You head into the local place, like I've said many times, they disappear. You mention the part you need, they disappear into the cavern in the back, not to come back for many minutes with usually an unmarked box. You're not even sure if it's the right part, if it's the exact thing that you need to put in your car, and then they just kind of, you know, dial up a price to be almost definitely something that you're going to pay more than if you just go to rockauto.com. rockauto.com, so easy to search. You just type in the make and model of your car, easy drop down menus. It's kind of filtered into the different parts of your car, and then by part and then by price, and you know you're getting the best price on the market, 30%, sometimes 50% better than you're going to find in your local spot. rockauto.com is a family business, and they've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So go to rockauto.com and shop for your auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Right now, go to rockauto.com, and when they say, how did you hear about us, all you have to do is type in Locked On. That's it. Just like the podcast network we're on. How did you hear about us? Locked On at rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
And good Lord, the madness of March is clearly upon us right now in full swing. And you can get more analysis around these top prospects that are going to be available in next year's NBA draft with the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Drafts. And so finally now we come to, I have a sense, it's omniscient, I felt it in my bones, it wasn't the weather today. The buyout market in general for the NBA and the way that it functions and how teams come to acquire these players, how they leave their former teams, the contracts, all that. I have a sense, Doug, that you have strong thoughts about the whole situation.
It's the dumbest thing ever. I just don't even understand how it works.
Doug, tell me how you really feel.
I get that it helps the Nets here, so I'm probably running counter. Like, maybe finally the Nets are the beneficiaries of this system where it's never mattered for them before because they're not in, you know, playoff and championship run or haven't been in the past. So I totally get that the part where this thing completely helps the Nets. But the part where the system is, you're a bad team, you signed a terrible contract, you don't want to have this player on the books anymore for at least like a few million more, sometimes many millions more, like Blake Griffin, who still had another year on the another huge number on the year in the contract, and he's just so rich that he wants out. Look, I get that everyone has free will and is able to do the things that they want to do, and it's not my money, and I'm not, you know, taking money away from people or giving it to other people. So it's not that. It's just that the mechanics around a system where these veteran, still valuable players who are only not valuable because the contracts are so bad. It's like not like Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge are bad. It's their contracts are bad. We talk about this, right? Like, it's them compared to their contracts are just two totally different things. But when the both sides can be like, nah, this isn't for me anymore, see you later. And then it's just the haves at the top that are able to buy these guys into their system for pennies on the dollar compared to their skill level because they've already been paid by their previous employer. It's a silly system. It just, the system is very, very silly. Like, and like, you know, you get Andre Drummond, who's about to be bought out and is going to go to the Lakers. Great. More power to him. I'm not saying that the Lakers shouldn't be able to be able to do it. The Nets just did it with two guys. It's just the system is so silly. Because if you look at it from an outsider perspective and you say, okay, so these guys that have bad contracts and these teams are dog crap, the other ones that they were on before, and they don't want them anymore because they're too expensive and they just don't fit the plans, and then they just want to leave. And now the good teams get to just load up on all the bad contracts from before at no dollars at all because these guys just don't need the money. It's so antithetical to what the economics of basketball are at any other time of the year. Like, if they're free agents, there'd be like these bidding wars among all teams, maybe, right? Like, but now it's just like this one time a year where there's only a certain type of team that wants them. This whole system feels very silly to me. Maybe this year is worse than others because the names that are getting moved around, they're actually like big names, especially from the past. Drummond, Aldridge, you know, Blake, those are the three big ones. People are dreaming on Otto Porter getting bought out. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I just think the system itself is just, I'm rambling right now, but it's mostly just because my gut feeling on the system is it's like just very dumb.
Well, and Kevin Love would have been a part of that too as well, right, if he had been healthy this year. Another big name that could have been a buyout candidate potentially.
Well, he'll get bought out next year. Like,
right. Like, but let me ask you this. Hold on, because calm down, Doug. Darn it. So say Drummond now, if he gets bought out, because I think you're right, because like, the big money has already been paid. So now if you're Drummond, you want to win a championship, go to the team. Aldridge, you want to get a chance to win a championship, great, go to the Nets. But in both Griffin and Aldridge's case, you are talking about, again, guys that are veterans. This is not the young prime of their career guys. So maybe it should be more value than what they're going to sign for, veteran minimums. But I don't know how high that number should go. The other piece that I was curious for you, though, is there was some speculation if Drummond gets bought out that a team like the Knicks, like there's rumors that the Knicks would be in on trying to bring him in. And if they did, they'd be offering him real money, not, hey, here's a veteran minimum to come help us compete for a playoff spot. We're going to give you a 3-year deal for whatever that value is going to be. Do you think that, you know, shouldn't that exist somewhere in here? Are not enough teams maybe getting in on these guys when they get bought out? Because understanding they do want to win championships, but if they're choosing to go there for next to nothing, another team could say, well, we'll give you real money. You got bought out. You're still getting paid a ton of money. And we want to give you your next big or lucrative contract right now. Is there anything to that other teams should be a part of this as well? Or does it feed into probably the narrative you're saying about, like, well, Aldridge wasn't going to go anywhere, but where maybe he could win a championship?
Nothing stopping the Knicks from doing that now. They would just be borderline nuts to do it. Like, maybe their cap hit would actually be a problem. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the Knicks book, so I don't know. Like, the Knicks for this year, though, I guess if they wanted to do it, nothing would stop them. But I just don't know why they would, to make them marginally, unless that was like their big offseason, you know, free agent signing that they were looking at. You have to start wondering, like, why guys that are getting bought out at the end of a contract year are, you know, before an option. Or no, he took the player option this year. Would be a guy that you wanted to sign long term. Right. Like the financials on that look a little bit funny. But in general, nothing is stopping the Knicks from doing it now. There's just only this select group of teams that even want to be in on the races, because aren't worried about your, they're up into the tax anyway. So some of these teams just don't care. It's like, well, what's a few more million at this point, right? Like,
and should these teams be forced to then play them out? Should Detroit have to have held on to Blake Griffin? Should Aldridge have to stay with the Spurs through the season? Like, is that a part of your stupidity around this piece of, like, hey, you got to play this year out before you get to move? You can't do it so that now, as you said, like, the rich teams get richer for these playoff runs, as opposed to you constituted your team the way they did. Unless you're going to make a real trade at the deadline to acquire pieces and give up assets, you don't get to go to the bargain bin and just kind of pick out clothes for free.
There should probably be a bigger cap hit on the teams that are signing him, like a cap hit relative to the number that they got bought out around. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Like, I'm not exactly sure what the mechanics are there, but I think that would probably at least stop some of this probably from happening. Because only, again, it's just one of these very silly, any independent auditor would look at this and say, oh, so these guys just left and went to, because basically what you're basically saying is, oh, these guys just left, you know, good players left one team and just went to another team midseason because they felt like it. Like, that's when you kind of boil it down, that's exactly what's happening here, right? It's not, this isn't a trade. This isn't like the other team had a load up. You know, the one team had to load up different assets to be able to get them, or, you know, they didn't have to do signing trades or, like, develop, you know, figure out what kind of picks they needed to put into the other team. It's just like, oh, the one team didn't want them anymore because they decided to pay them too much money to start with, and the other team was just waiting around and had some extra money. Like, that's the whole thing. It doesn't make any, there's no other time or any other sport where this kind of mechanism would make any sense. By the way, if I'm missing something here, please at me and explain it to me. Like, you know, choose to do it like I'm 7, because I've been thinking a lot about this. It just doesn't.
Shouldn't
make
there, you
a
know,
lot.
In talking about that, and this is just maybe just something that came to my mind, is it's like the idea with the NFL where, you know, and this is specifically in free agency, if enough players go out based on how many players you bring in the following draft class, you get compensatory picks in the 3rd, 4th round, right? I wonder if there's something to that that should be going on in the NBA where part of.
Oh, my God. No way. Every team would buy everybody out.
Right. So, so then it's like,
or no one would sign them. I guess maybe that would stop it, because then no one would sign these guys. The only thing I think actually stopping some of these guys from accepting buyouts is because there's almost assuredly more guys out there that teams have approached and said, hey, what do you think about a buyout here? And they just said no. And it's probably the only thing that actually stops this from happening on a more even widespread stage is that the part where you as the player kind of look bad by having accepted a buyout because it's an admission that you weren't even coming close to what your contract was. Like, actually, that's probably the only thing that has stopped this from happening to more guys, right? Like, they, because like getting the I've been bought out tag attached to your name is probably what stops it from, like, you know, from Al Horford not having been bought out, or Kevin Love, or whatever, these guys who, like, the money isn't that important at this point, you wouldn't think, like, based on the numbers that they've been making. But they're just like, I'm not going to be a buyout guy, you know, like, right. I'm not going, like, the pride around not being a buyout guy, or the long term hit to your overall worth going forward, knowing that a team bought you out, like, that actually is probably the only thing that stops them from having it happen more. But in general, that's, I think, the only mechanism that is stopping it. There's nothing else really doing it. And then, like, again, the Nets totally benefit from this. I get it.
Yeah. And, well, oddly enough, like, a guy like Kevin Love, who won a championship, right? So he doesn't necessarily want to have that stain of being a buyout guy, to your point, right? My reputation's intact. I've also made my money. I've also won a championship. Like, I don't need to go and chase anything now at this point. Oddly enough, though, because I'll just quickly throw it in, too. We're talking about all the different versions, right? NFL has a certain mechanism. Oh, God, what would that do if the NBA had that? When we talked about Locked On Pistons with Matt Soch, remember, he threw out the idea that Pistons should be getting something in that regard. There is that idea. I know this is trade, essentially, but transfer windows in soccer, right, in European soccer, you pay a fee for the opportunity to sign that guy. So maybe that's something that he's associating there, where it's like, yeah, we bought out Blake Griffin, but now the next team that wants to sign him, you're still paying, you know, you're paying a fee to be able then to bring him in. And by the way, in all these scenarios, I think, ask fans of any of these sports, they're going to have a problem with every one of them in some version, right? So I'm sure there's probably a better version for the NBA, and I also don't know if the easy answer is there, right?
Yeah, like, and I'm not suggesting we go the NFL route where it's like, hey, I know you're supposed to make this money, but it turns out that's just like a fake contract. We're just not going to pay it for you. Like, I know we all agreed on this number, but we also kind of also agreed that it was totally made up. Like that's like the NFL version of this is way worse. And then the baseball version is you end up with Albert Pujols till he's 50 years old at $30 million a year, and your team can't ever be good. So it's not like these other sports have really figured it out either. It's just that, you know, oftentimes when you're dealing with this amount of money, these guys just end up making mistakes. It's almost always there's a mistake made around the number of the years on a contract and money on the older guys on the tail end of it. Like, this is the theme of all this stuff. It's like, hey, if they were really good and just killing it at their number, they would never be bought out. It's just always these teams just sign these guys for the extra year or two, and this is where you always just fall into the problem with it. It just, anyway, I've tried to.
I do wonder, by the way, it's like, I wonder if teams will start looking at, we talk too much about superstars, right? LeBron James will sign the 1-1 contract, shorter term deals, so that they can dictate what they're going to do in the next step. I wonder if NBA teams are going to try to flip that, understanding, listen, these guys can go somewhere else, but for your mid-level guy, or for a guy like Blake, who, yeah, big name, certainly talented, you want to have him. And also, if you really look at it, you probably don't want to have him on a 5-year deal. You say, we 3-year contracts, right? The things that both sides can get in and out of. The downside to that, just like the NFL, is you end up with a lot of player movement, right? There isn't a lot of, you know, you end up rooting for the jersey, not for the player, scratch that and reverse it. If you're a fan of LeBron, you love him, you really don't care where he plays, right? So I wonder how much that's an issue for any league to say, yeah, great, we had Blake Griffin for 2 years on the Clippers, then he was on 2 years for Detroit, then 2 years for Brooklyn, then 2 years over here, right? At some point, organizations can look at it and say the financial side of it makes a lot more sense. But for mid-level teams, mid-market teams, you probably are building cachet with your fan base around these big names and having them for long contracts, having them as centerpieces to what you're trying to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Cavs would have signed LeBron to a 30-year contract if they could have at the time. Like, just to guarantee that he would have been there at least through his prime, and they would have dealt with it for the last two decades of the problems with it, right? Like, he kind of screwed them in the other way by never committing, and they never knew what to do. So anyway, this turned into a longer discussion. Anyway, I just need to look, we have our own podcast, so every once in a while I get to just rant on the things that I want to rant about, and that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. Today was rant around the buyout market. We will be back again tomorrow breaking down the Nets game on Monday. In the meantime, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust, you know how to do it there. Maybe just, you know, tap on the keyboard a little bit and write a nice little review as well. Always much appreciated. Give us a follow on Twitter, combining my consonants at the beginning. A follow on Twitter, trying to get to 1,000 Twitter followers. We're about 30 away right now. And we'll also have Matt Brooks on later in the week talking more basketball. So a lot going on. Buddy, yeah, what do we usually do at the end of the podcast? I'm faltering here. I threw the Brooks thing in. I threw the Brooks thing in. And whenever I go off script a little bit, you know, I'm speaking of improvisation, not my gift when it comes to doing stuff near the end of the podcast. Anyway, that's where it is.
A tweet and a follow. They call it a twallow. We're building towards something here in Brooklyn, obviously, friends. An ice age here, a million years of mountains building there. Geology is a study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really. Pressure and time. Ellis Boyd Redding.
Oh, I thought that was Andy Dufresne, but that's right. That's another character in the movie. Red. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.